The following is a seminar entitled Importance of Srimad Bhagavatam, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on December 10th, 2012, in Phoenix, Mauritius.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganitam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Vadijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Vadam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Svaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. So, I've been asked to speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam, the importance of the Bhagavatam. And I was thinking this kirtan is so nice. This is already Bhagavatam. So we could just do the kirtan for an hour and a half. And that's perfect Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam and the Hare Krishna mantra are non-different. So what would be the loss? We can just keep this kirtan going. It'll be a perfect study of the Bhagavatam. But, as we normally do, we have kirtan, and Prabhupada taught us, you have kirtan and then you actually read from the Bhagavatam. But this is the importance of the Bhagavatam. It'd be like an overview of the Bhagavatam, instead of a specific verse, which we do every morning. But I still wanted to have the Bhagavatam here. We're going to talk about the Bhagavatam, and the Bhagavatam has to be here. So I'm very happy they brought me the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This book is a very, very special book. It is Krishna himself, manifested in the form of the pastimes of his devotees and his own pastimes. So it's a very, very important book. As we all know, in the history of our ISKCON, this is the book that Prabhupada wrote. He didn't bring the Bhagavad Gita, he brought the Bhagavatam. He actually brought the first canto. Those wonderful brown volumes that he had printed in Delhi. He brought a big case of them on the boat. But joined ISKCON, you can still order verse canto part 3 from Boston. You can put your check in the mail that you get one of those original Bhagavatams that come on the Jaladuta. I mean, it was the first and 1-1 and 1-2 were sold out, but 1-3 was still available. You could, one of our brahmacharis in our ashram, he ordered the 1-3 and it came in the mail, one of those Bhagavatams from the boat. So it's a very special thing, this Srimad Bhagavatam. You see, there's so many Vedic literatures, you see. There's so many Puranas. There's 18 Puranas, you see. Six for those in the mode of ignorance, six for the mode of passion, six for the mode of goodness. But of those six, for those in the mode of goodness, there's one of those which is for those who want to become completely transcendental of the modes of nature. That is called the Amalam Puranam, the spotless Purana, you see. That is the Srimad Bhagavatam. The second verse of the Bhagavatam describes the spotless nature of the Bhagavatam. So we can look at that very beautiful poetic verse. 112 Bhagavatam. Dharma prajita kaitava trupadamo nimatsuranam sutam vejam vasta matra vasta shivadam tapatrayon mulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamune Krite King Vaparayar Ishvaraha Sadhya Hridya Virudya Tetra Titi Bishru Shru Shubhishtachana. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of the Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. So, this is the importance of the Bhagavatam. How would you like to have Krishna established in your heart? So, well, he's already there. He's a super soul, one could say. But do you realize his presence? Do you personally experience? Do we personally experience his presence? That's it. Or is it just some intellectual concept? Well, the Lord's in my heart, right? So, it goes from the level of Gyan, a theoretical understanding, the Lord is in my heart. By Bhagavatam, we will come to the stage of realizing fully how Krishna is present within our heart. Being able to reciprocate and communicate directly with that Krishna within our heart, you see. The Bhagavatam will bring us to that level. Therefore, every day we must study Bhagavatam. Every day you must come here for Bhagavatam class, or if you can't do it, you must study it at home. Everyone should study Bhagavatam every day. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya is stated. This Bhagavatam is meant to be studied every day. You see. If we are not studying Bhagavatam every day, we are cheating ourselves out of Krishna consciousness. So let us look at some of the wonderful aspects of this most nectarian shloka. I mean, this verse is so beautiful. It's so wonderful. Dharmak prajatakaitavota padamo nirmatsaranam sutam. The first thing is prajata, completely rejected, or sometimes it is said kicked out. This Bhagavatam doesn't mess around with pseudo-religion. God, give me this, give me that. That is not religion. God, give me my daily bread. That's not love of God. That's love of daily bread. So Bhagavatam says, don't mess around with that stuff, you see. You approach God for one purpose and one purpose only, and that's to fully surrender to him. Not as an order supplier, give me this, give me that, help my kids pass their exams, like them. No. Simply approach the Lord and surrender. This is the point of the Bhagavatam. Any religious principle which is materially motivated to get something out of God for my sense gratification or the sense gratification of my family members, that is completely rejected from point one, from the very beginning. It says this stuff is not allowed in the Bhagavatam. This is for pure devotees, who those who are not interested in Rajagun and Tamagun, or even Sattvagun, those who are interested in pure bhakti, you see. Bhagavatam is meant for them. Who don't want to linger, who don't want to loiter in the cycle of birth and death. Bhagavatam is meant for that class of men and women who don't want to take birth again in this material world. You see. So it's the most important work. You see. And then it's very wonderful how the Bhagavatam it propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. So what does that mean? It means if you're not pure in heart, you can't understand it. This is why we have to have a nice kirtan first. Purify our hearts. You see, the kirtan purifies us. By kirtan, we become purified so we can have a better ability to actually understand this transcendental sign. You see? Because it's only understandable by those who are pure. Of course, the good news is, even if you're impure, if you hear Bhagavatam, you become purified. Otherwise, we'd be out, what would our hope be? You see? But even though we are impure, if we have a sincere desire to become pure, by hearing the Bhagavatam, we will become purified. The next line is a wonderful definition of the highest truth. People talk about the highest truth, you see. Do you want to realize the highest truth? Or the absolute truth? Yes, I want to realize the absolute truth of the highest truth. We can say what it is. Do you know what the highest truth is? We could. Normally you might say Krishna, you know, but that's true. But to say it in a philosophical way is also very important. Because not everyone has accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can not only preach, you know, for those who are Krishna Bhaktas, but preach to the general population. Would you like to realize the highest truth? Would you like to know what is the highest truth? Oh yes, the highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. Now that's very attractive to any thoughtful person. That is very, very attractive. You just say Krishna, they'll think, oh, this is maybe a cult. You see. But if you can, this is a very important philosophy. To present Krishna consciousness philosophically is very, very important. This is how, you see, someone, of course, who's like a Hindu, who's grown up in a family of Vaishnavas, accepting Krishna is one thing. But what about somebody who's, from a Christian background, who's become an agnostic, the general population, how do you convince them of this? You see, this is very important, these concepts. We should be able to preach like this. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. So, some people say, everything's an illusion. Well, Bhagavatam doesn't agree. Of course, you can analyze that philosophically. If somebody says, and we hear that sometimes, everything's an illusion, man. You see? Say, oh really? Well, I guess your philosophical concept is also an illusion, sir. If what you're saying is true, then your philosophical concept is an illusion. So I can't take it seriously because it's according to you, what you just said is an illusion. You see? So in this way, we have to be able to defeat these different philosophies which are against the Vaishnava conclusion, you see, because they're not true. We don't accept Vaishnavism because that's our religion. We accept Vaishnavism because it is the culture which gives one the ability to realize the highest truth in full. You see? That's why we accept Vaishnava culture. It is the culture which gives one the facility to realize the highest truth in full. You see? That's why we accept Vaishnavism. You see? So that realization of the highest truth, the roadmap of how to achieve that is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavad Gita is also part of the roadmap. That's the entryway into the Bhagavatam. Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study and the Bhagavatam is the full meal. Or you can say Bhagavad Gita is the appetizer and the Bhagavatam is the full meal and the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the dessert. What a feast. But this is the main substance here, you see. Unless you can understand Bhagavad philosophy, you'll never become solid in Krishna consciousness. So it's very, very important to understand this Bhagavad philosophy. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. That's a beautiful, beautiful concept. Of course, we know the threefold miseries, adiyatmik, adibhautik, adidaivik. Adiyatmik miseries is the mind and the body. Adibhautik miseries caused by other living entities like the tax department or the mosquitoes, you see. Or the terrorists. Miseries caused by the adidaivik miseries. Miseries caused by natural situations or the demigod. Like the drought here, you have sometimes the drought. Last year, I remember we couldn't even take a shower. Couldn't even flush the toilet. There was such a shortage of water here, you see. Had to go out in the woods. Couldn't flush the toilet. You see, that's called adidaivik miseries, drought. So we're being afflicted by these different miseries. Adiyatmik, adibhautik, adidaivik. But Bhagavatam takes these three weeds. You see, they're compared to weeds. They're not beautiful flowers, they're weeds. Now you know, if you cut a weed off at the root, if you cut it off at the surface, it may appear the weeds are gone. It's like the parents may ask the child, get rid of all the weeds out of the garden. So the child may go and he may cut all the weeds off at the surface and think my business is finished. But tomorrow they're all back again. The parents say, what did you do? What happened? You told you to weed the garden. Well, I got rid of all the weeds. Well, how'd you do it? I cut them off at the surface. My dear son, if you want to uproot the weeds, you have to dig around, loosen the earth, and pull the whole root out. That's how you get rid of the weed. You see? So, Bhagavatam doesn't just cut the weeds off at the surface. You see, material sense gratification is a form of wiping out the miseries superficially. I'm depressed, so I get drunk. It may appear my depression is gone. But actually it's not, because the root is still there. And tomorrow when you sober up again, it will come on even more fiercely than it did today. You see? So material sense gratification, the material society, they try to get rid of the miseries on the surface level without taking it by the root. And therefore they're never successful in conquering over the threefold miseries. They're never successful. I don't care how much their science advances, how much their entertainment, how many versions of the iPhone they get, they're not going to get rid of the threefold miseries. But the Bhagavatam will. That's the difference. Therefore, this is the topmost technology. You want to be high tech? This is where you have to go. Bhagavatam is the epitome of high tech, the perfection of high tech, you see. And then each sentence just gets sweeter and sweeter as we go deeper into the shloka. It just gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. Then it says, this beautiful Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavate. This is how the word Srimad is being translated. Beautiful. Srimad Bhagavatam. Beautiful Bhagavatam. What does beautiful mean? It means full of beauty. It's beautiful. I mean, even the way that it's beautiful, isn't it? You ever seen a more beautiful book than this? It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. Visually, the illustrations, the poetry of it is just beautiful. Poetically also. I mean, Shakespeare can't come close to this poetry. You see, Dharma Prabhupada. I mean, the poetry of it, the Sanskrit poetry is just fabulous. It's beautiful. So in every way, it's the most beautiful book you can ever find, the Bhagavatam. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam, the beautiful Bhagavatam. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? So we don't need to read so many books. We really don't. If you can just focus your life on studying the Gita, it helps you get into the Bhagavad. The Gita and the Bhagavatam, you can spend your whole life studying those two books and you become a pure devotee, you see. We don't need so many books. We have to read this Purana and that Purana and this Upanishad and that Upanishad. It's not necessary to read all these books. If you simply focus on Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you see, that is everything is there. And the other books given by Prabhupada also, you see, they're all giving. The nectar devotion is how to practice the culture of Bhagavatam in your daily activities. You see, in the way you dress, in the way you, what you do in the morning, the nectar devotion is Bhagavatam in practice. So then the conclusion is, as soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. Well, that's pretty important, Andy. These two points of attentiveness and submissiveness then are of the utmost importance. Some people hear attentively, but with a view to defeating. They want to pick it apart and find fault with it. Oh, it's some ancient knowledge, you know, it's not politically correct. They want to pick it apart and find fault with it. It's not valid, it's outdated. So many criticisms people may have. But that's a completely foolish thing, you see. Completely foolish thing. This Bhagavatam never becomes old-fashioned or outdated. The universes can come and go, but this knowledge will always be valid, potent, vibrant, beautiful, uplifting, refreshing, invigorating, stimulating, enlightening. This knowledge will always be a shelter for us. If we can learn to see everything through the eyes of the scripture, this is called Shastra Chakshus, we will never be bewildered in any situation. We'll never be afraid in any situation. If you see everything through the eyes of the Bhagavatam, you will always feel confident that Krishna will protect you in every situation. You never become bewildered or frightened or paranoid. I see. So this is very, 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 very important knowledge, very important wisdom. By connecting with the Bhagavatam, you connect with Krishna. I remember when I joined ISKCON, there was no formalized Bhagavatam class established at that time. We didn't chant Jai Radha Madhava. We didn't even know that song yet. And then Prabhupada introduced this new thing for ISKCON called the Morning Bhagavatam Class, a standard thing for the worldwide society in every temple. the morning Bhagavatam class. And it was very exciting. Every time Prabhupada introduced Tulsi worship, that was something new. Bhagavatam class, that was something new. It was very exciting. Prabhupada introducing a new program now, you see. Actually, Prabhupada, at that time, in the U.S., devotees were joining the movement like anything. I mean, every day people were coming in and shaving up and surrendering and putting on dhotis, you see, saris. Every day they were coming and moving into the ashram and giving their life to Prabhupada's mission. But no one knew anything. Nobody knew how to say Sanskrit verses. No one knew anything. The people didn't know the philosophy. They didn't understand much of the philosophy. They were sincere, but they didn't really know what they were doing. So Prabhupada wrote a letter. It's a famous letter. He said, "We have to boil the milk until it becomes thick and sweet. If you keep adding milk to the pot, it will never thicken." You see. He said, "It's more important to train the devotees we have now than it is to make new devotees." So the Bhagavatam class was meant to be the training period for the devotees, especially. The Bhagavatam class was the intensive training that everybody would understand what is the science of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said we can do one verse every day, and in one generation we can finish one time the Bhagavatam, and then the next generation can again start it and do it, you see. So his vision was that all the devotees would come together every day and study Bhagavatam. His instruction. See, all devotees, initiated devotees, must attend morning and evening class. Of course, we were all living in the ashram then. So now we have different schedules, people have to go to work, but you should study Bhagavatam every day. So are there any questions? You can pass them forward. Oh wow, we got a big stack. That's good. Okay. When trying to distribute Bhagavad Gita, many people say that his teaching is meant for people 5,000 years ago and not now. How can we reject this argument or defeat this argument? The actual word. They say that Bhagavad Gita, oh wow, we gotta hurry, was spoken 5,000 years ago. Therefore, it's relevant then, but it's not relevant now. Well, actually, the Bhagavad Gita was also spoken millions of years ago to the sun god Vivishvam. If that their argument is valid, then Arjuna could have said, "Well, Krishna, you spoke this thousands, millions of years ago to the sun god, so this knowledge isn't relevant now." If something spoken previously is only valid at the time it was spoken, and it's not valid now, then Arjuna could argue, "Well, this isn't valid anymore because you spoke it millions of years ago to the sun god Vivishvam." So just as it was valid when Krishna spoke it millions of years ago to the sun god Vivishvan, if it's valid when he spoke to Arjuna 5,000 years ago, it's also valid now. What's the proof? Apply it and see what happens. That's the proof. If you practice Bhagavad Gita, you'll realize God. Whether it's millions of years ago, 5,000 years ago, or right now in 2012, going 2013, if you apply this science seriously, you will personally realize God. That's a fact. If you don't believe it, try it. And you'll experience the reality. What will happen if a sinful person reads the Bhagavatam? Will he become purified even if he's not chanting the Maha Mantra? Yes. Even if someone even touches the Bhagavatam, they become purified. Okay, I'm having trouble getting through the 10th canto, especially the absence of Srila Prabhupada's purport, chapter of the stealing of the gopis and the calves. How should my attitude be? Well, as soon as we get to, just like I mentioned in the class this morning, I have a hard time once we get to the, once we leave Prabhupada's prayer reports behind. I have a very hard time speaking on the Bhagavatam. Right now we're in the 10th canto, and I'm looking forward to when you all get back to the first canto again. So when I give class here, I can have Prabhupada's purports, because without the Prabhupada's purports, it's just not the same. Of course, at the same time, Prabhupada instructed that his disciples should finish up the Bhagavatam. So the potency of Prabhupada is there through his disciples. That's a fact. This Bhagavatam we have now is also wonderful. Wonderful, dedicated disciples of Prabhupada have completed it to please Prabhupada, and Prabhupada's potency is acting through them. So, that's also wonderful, and we can get great inspiration because Prabhupada inspired them. So it's one of those things, one and different, you know. It's nice, actually. Even the part of the Bhagavatam that is not written by, that doesn't have, is not translated or purported by Srila Prabhupada. But Prabhupada's potency is there, acting through our wonderful God brothers who have done this service. So it's wonderful. But we have to admit there's a special flavor, and they will also admit that there's a very special flavor and that it can't be beat. And that's there in the original purports of Srila Prabhupada. So it is nice now. But I have to admit, I'm looking forward to getting back to Prabhupada's purports. Okay, Srila Prabhupada mentions that there are two ways, one Pancharatriki Vidhi and Bhagavad Vidhi. He said that Bhagavad Vidhi is more important now. However, nowadays we see many devotees are following many Pancharatriki Vidhi than Bhagavad Vidhi. Please enlighten us. Yeah, if we get caught up in ritualistic activities and we forget the essence, which is hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and distributing the glories of the Lord, then we can have some difficulty in our spiritual life at the time. We should never forget the essence. Okay, the Ritvik community says that they master the Srimad Bhagavad Gita because they connect with Srila Prabhupada directly. They want to entrap all of you young devotees to join them. How to stop them? See, the Ritvik community, they don't even follow Prabhupada because Prabhupada told us in May of 1977 very clearly that after he departs, the new devotees become the disciples of his disciples. The Ritvi people say, don't follow Prabhupada's instruction, follow us. Actually, there was a conference set up on Pambo. It was called the Initiations Conference. And if many devotees joined that when it was first started. And also one devotee, his name is Madhu Pandit, the one who stole the Bangalore temple from ISKCON. He was also not Madhu Pandit. The one who puts out the Ritvik magazine, he was on that conference also. His name is Krishnakant. Krishnakant never took initiation from anyone. But he puts out this Ritvik philosophy. He's the one who wrote the book the Ritviks consider their gospel. So I had a debate with Krishnakant on this forum. And the final concluding argument was this. I said, Prabhupada actually did encourage me that I could become spiritual master in one letter. He told me he encouraged me. And so I asked Krishnakant, I said, Prabhupada encouraged me I could become guru. You're telling me I cannot become guru. So should I follow you or Prabhupada? And I defeated him because he couldn't answer me. If he told me I should follow Prabhupada, Prabhupada encouraged me I could become guru. But he couldn't tell me not to follow Prabhupada and follow him. So he was defeated. But he never admitted it, of course. But actually, he was defeated. Checkmate. He couldn't move. He was trapped. You see? Prabhupada encouraged me to become guru. You're telling me I cannot become. So I listened to Prabhupada or you. He couldn't say a word. You see? So this Ritvik philosophy is simply a devious attempt that they wanted to be guru and they couldn't be because they weren't qualified, so they say nobody can be guru. It's just sour grapes philosophy, that's all. You know the Aesop's fable? The of course, it was originally from the Hita Upadesha, but Aesop stole the credit. The fox, he wanted the grapes. And they looked really good up there. Wow, good-looking grapes. He was jumping to get those grapes. But he couldn't make it. He tried really hard. He mustered all of his strength. He could never reach the grapes. He said, oh, the grapes are sour. So the Riptiks are simply sour grapes philosophers. I wanted to be guru, and I couldn't qualify myself, so therefore nobody can be guru. You see, that's Riptiks. They're sour grape philosophers. That's their position. But you know what? We're eating the grapes. And they're not. We're tasting those sweet grapes of Prabhupada's mercy, and they're missing out. So a devotee reads the Bhagavad Gita every day, but does not read the Srimad Bhagavatam. Will the devotee progress spiritually at the same level as another devotee who reads the Srimad Bhagavatam regularly? Well, it depends. The real criterion of advancement is how much does your heart melt when you chant Hare Krishna? You see, how much does your heart melt? How much does your heart become soft like melted butter when you chant Hare Krishna, you see? That's the real criterion. Okay, a devotee follows the four regular principles. He chants 16 rounds daily, engages in book distribution, but the devotee does not read the Bhagavatam. Well, if someone will not read the Bhagavatam, then that is called nam aparad. Because Prabhupada has instructed us to read the Bhagavatam. If you don't read the Bhagavatam, you're committing an offense against the holy name. Nam aparad. Okay. How to apply Bhagavatam in everyday life? Well, you read it, and you remember it, you talk about it, and you follow the instructions that are given in it. Simple thing. Okay. In Mauritius, there is no reading culture. People do not like to read. How do we encourage the devotees to read the Srimad Bhagavatam? Well, this lecture is one thing. Hopefully, you'll all become motivated to read the Bhagavatam. How many of you read the Bhagavatam sometimes? Oh my God. Whew. This is shocking. If I said every day, I'm afraid to even ask that one now. How many read it every day? Oh my God. Mukunda Dutt Prabhu Ki Jai. Please, please, please. Don't become offenders against Srila Prabhupada. Do you realize how hard he struggled to give us this Bhagavatam? He suffered those heart attacks on the boat to bring us the Bhagavatam. Please, please, I'm falling down on your feet and I'm begging you with straw in my mouth, please read Bhagavatam, even if it's only 5 minutes every day. Please, who will agree now to every day read at least Bhagavatam for 5 minutes? Raise your hand. Maybe they don't speak English. Hopefully. The ones who didn't raise their hand don't understand what I'm saying. Thank you very much. Okay.
You can ask them why they wouldn't want to read 5 minutes.
Huh?
Why wouldn't they want to read 5 minutes when Prabhupada has put in so much effort to bring us...
So Vishnu Priya Manaji is challenging. Why do you... That opens up a whole discussion with all of them now. You want them to discuss with me?
No, they can say. Well, what is
the they?
Cannot read for 5 minutes.
Do you want them to answer this point?
Yes.
All right. There's somebody who is saying, I will read only... She's challenging you. In other words, I will give an easy thing, but she always likes to give a harder thing. Because I'm a little bit soft. She likes to give a little more of a push than I do. That's why I keep her with me, because, I can be a little soft sometimes. But she's not soft, she's hard. So why would someone want to read only for 5 minutes? What's the reason?
What is the difficulty? Everybody has it. For reading 5 minutes every day, can't you all do it? You eat. What is the difficulty?
No difficulty.
Difficulty in reading? Five minutes?
There's no difficulty.
That's it? Yeah, there's no difficulty, so everybody can read.
Anyway, I have some disciples here, and aspiring disciples. And that's a requirement. Anybody who wants to be initiated by me, they have to be Bhagavatam every day. I'm adding it to my list of requirements. Anybody who is recommended, you know, for initiation, you have to also, I'll ask you, have you been reading, you read Bhagavatam every day? And that'll be a requirement. If you say no, well, so you have to wait. You have to wait. That's new, another added requirement. For those who want to be my disciples, and actually all of you should do them. I think all the gurus, I recommend, of course, it's up to each guru how they want to do, but at least for my disciples, you have to be reading Bhagavatam, otherwise no diksha, sorry. I need qualified disciples, not dead weight. Who don't know what Bhagavatam philosophy is. You see? You see, I need devotees who can actually help push forward this mission, the Prabhupada's mission. Those who have knowledge of Bhagavatam is a very, very important thing. If you don't know what Bhagavatam is, you're just dead weight on this movement. You're just, you know, you're holding us back. You're dragging, you're slowing the movement down if you're not knowledgeable in Bhagavatam. This movement, we need people who understand this philosophy, who can preach this philosophy, who can actually push forward this movement, who are like dead weight, who are holding it, slowing it down, you see. Please, read the Bhagavatam every day. So if someone is listening to Bhagavatam or Gita class while on a CD while driving to and from work, doesn't have time to study the books, is that all right? It could be. If you're really an intense schedule and you just absolutely cannot do it, that's also good. You can hear Prabhupada's lectures or other senior devotees speaking in the Bhagavatam. That's also good. But I recommend study and listen to the CDs both. See, that's what I do. It's like I also have a place where I, you know, I live in Texas. I'm there a few times a year. I get in the car. I have to drive sometimes somewhere. I have the CD already there, and Prabhupada's Bhagavatam classes are already there. I just had to push the button, and immediately there it is. I have one CD with four lectures on it. So I listen to those again and again and again and again and again and again. I remember many years ago, I was the cook in our Houston temple. Not only was I the cook, I was the bhajari, I was the dishwasher, I was the receptionist. I was everything. Because the temple president sent everybody out every day on book distribution except on Sunday. And I had to man the whole temple by myself. And I had no time to study. I mean, it was very intense. But I had a tape player in the kitchen. And I had one lecture of Prabhupada, two sides, two lectures. I heard those lectures again hundreds and hundreds of times. I heard those same lectures again. Every time I heard it, something new would come out of it. Every single time. It was never hackneyed, old, or dry. I mean, I take it back. One time a week I had a chance to study it. When I was stirring the burfi, I would stir with one hand and read with the other. That was the only time, I would say literally, that was the only, my schedule was so intense. That the only time I had to pick up a book was once a week when I was stirring the burfi. And I was cook like this when I was reading. Literally. One time I wanted to mail a letter. There was a mailbox two blocks away from our Rosalie Street Temple. And it was a miracle. One day I somehow was able to mail that letter, you see. It was so intense. I had to cook the offerings, make the deity plate, offer the arati, transfer the plate, clean the plates, serve the guests, answer the phone, answer the front door. It was really, really intense. But and Prabhupada, on one tape, he said, a devotee should always be engaged in studying. Always be engaged in studying. And he should always be engaged in doing service. So I was thinking, well, how can you do both? I mean, how can you always be studying and always doing service at the same time? I mean, Prabhupada said you should always be doing service and you should always be studying. But I actually realized how you can do it, you see. Because what is service? Just like I met a lady today, Ashwin's wife, she's a chemistry teacher. Is she here tonight? Chemistry teacher? And she didn't come. Oh, she is here. She's a chemistry teacher. Okay. So, and you have you give the theories of chemistry in the classroom, and then you go to the laboratory also, isn't it? So they can put it into practice. So the laboratory is another form of studying what you hear in the lecture. It's study in practice. So reading, sitting and reading is studying, but when you do the service, that is the laboratory section of the study. You understand? When you read that by chanting Hare Krishna, or you read that by mopping the floor for Krishna, you clean your heart. You read that in the book. And then you go mop the floor and you experience it. So actually you can study and you can do service 24/7. You simply have to give up material sense gratification. That's the catch. Don't serve your senses anymore. Only serve Krishna and Srila Prabhupada and Guru. That's the catch. If you will do that, then you can turn your whole life into study in practice. That's a thing. You can read a Bhagavatam verse and the whole day you can meditate on it and see how it works in real day, everyday life. You see. Truth works. You see. That's how you know it's true, because it works. So you hear the knowledge, and then you apply the knowledge, and you'll experience the knowledge in practice. So anyway, continue. What advice would you give to anyone who is hardly... Oh, wait a minute, I just answered that one. Okay, if I mixed up these, the unanswered and the answered, let's see. Okay. Why Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the topmost Purana among the other Puranas? Because the other Puranas are for persons in the modes of nature. For example, in the Shiva Purana, it advises that Lord Shiva is the Supreme. You say, what? Yes. The Shiva Purana says Lord Shiva is the Supreme Lord. This is meant for people who are in the lower mode of nature. So they can fix themselves in a particular way and make some progress. You may say, how the Purana could actually give misinformation? Well, I'll give you an example to help you understand. In math, in arithmetic, just like when I was a kid in school, you see, we were a little tiny, just beginning our study of math. We were studying a new thing. We studied addition. And then we taught a new thing called subtraction. And the teacher taught us you cannot subtract a number for a number which is less than itself. You see. You cannot subtract a 3 from a 2. You can subtract a 3 from a 3 and get a 0. You can subtract a 3 from a 4 and get a 1. But you cannot subtract a 3 from a 2. Students, there's a rule. You cannot subtract a number from a number smaller than itself. So we memorized that rule and we understood this is one of the rules of mathematics. But then the following year, or maybe a few years down the road, we learn about negative numbers. We learn, well, actually, yes, you can. Once you come to a higher level understanding, yes, you can. You can subtract 3 from 2 and get a minus 1. You see? So that rule was a valid rule at a certain point in our mathematical evolution. You see? That rule was valid at a certain point. But on a higher level, it was no longer valid. So in the same way, the statement that Shiva is the Supreme is valid for people on a certain level of consciousness who are not have no desire to get liberated, who just they want to do different things for material advancement. That rule helps them to fix in a certain pattern of activity that can gradually bring them to the point where they can take the Bhagavatam philosophy. But someone who comes to the Bhagavatam, those are immediately rejected. That statement is for people who are materially motivated that Shiva is the Supreme. It's not for those who are interested in liberation from the cycle of birth and death. Can we study the other Puranas? My dear devotees, you're not even reading the Bhagavatam and you're asking about reading other Puranas? Give me a break. By reading Prabhupada's books, especially the Bhagavatam, in his purport, you'll read so many things about the other Puranas. Don't go jumping like monkeys, getting this book and that book. Read Prabhupada's books. I sometimes advise my disciples, if you want to read other books, first you must thoroughly read and understand all of Prabhupada's books. Then you can ask about reading other books. You see. So just focus on reading Prabhupada's books. Okay. In the scriptures it is said that when the individual soul attains Goloka Dham, he never returns to this material world. And how is it that originally we were in Goloka, but we've fallen down to this material world? The Bhagavad Gita very clearly says he never comes back again. Punar janma navidyate. The word puna means again, punaha. He doesn't fall again. That means you can fall once, but you won't fall twice. That's what it means. There's an old saying in America, once burned, twice shy. My godbrother Drishtel used to say that many times. I learned it from him. Once burned, twice shy. Let's see. So, if you get burned, just like a little kid, you know, the mother says, Johnny, don't stick your hand in the fire because you'll get burned. So little Johnny thinks, so why is mother forbidding me? I mean, that fire is so beautiful, you know, that blue flame up there on the stove. It's so pretty. I mean, wow. Looks so fascinating, that blue flame up there on the stove. Mother tells something burned. I don't know what burned is, but that flame sure looks beautiful up there on the stove. So one day the son, little Johnny, takes his hand in the fire and he gets burned. Now will he once burned, twice shy. Will he do it again? No. And Prabhupada gives an example from his own householder life. One of his children wanted to stick the hand in the fan. Now, nowadays, the fans are all kid-proof. But I remember when I was a kid, my grandmother had one of the old-time fans, similar to the one that Prabhupada had in India, where you can stick your hand in there. You know, it's big things. It's not like tight bars where you can't stick your hand in. They weren't kid-proof in the old days. So the little child of Prabhupada wanted to stick his hand in the fan. And so Prabhupada's friend said, to cure him of this habit, here's what you do. You turn the fan very, very slow so it won't really cut him or, you know, cut off his finger. Just give him a good ting, you know. Turn the fan blade down really slow and let him do it. Let him stick his hand in the fan. So Prabhupada did that. And he stuck his hand in the fan and he got a good hurt, but it didn't, you know, injure him. Just a good hurt because of very slow speed. So he would never do it again. So once we can do it, once we may, out of curiosity, as they say, curiosity killed the cat. Once out of curiosity, you may try to imitate the Supreme. But we won't do it again after getting burned. Okay. It's said that the Papa Purusha hides in grains and beans on Ekadasi day, and then one eats grains and then beans and ekadasi, he's eating sins. There are several instances when the ekadasi vrat is observed on the dvadasi, just like today. No, just follow the vrat and you're safe. Whatever is there, follow the vrat and you're protected. You're okay. Our authorities have given us a proper calendar. You don't have to be bewildered. Oh no, I'm eating on ekadasi. You know, just follow the authorities. They understand. What was the main confidential reason behind the advent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Lord Chaitanya wanted to taste that the sweet, unlimitedly sweet flavor of becoming his own devotee. He was saying, Srimati Radharani, even though Krishna is supreme enjoyer, he's saying that Radharani is enjoying more than he is. So he wants to taste that nectar of being a Krishna Bhakta. So he appears for that purpose. Is there any scriptural evidence from the original Vedas that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? There are many references you can look up in the I advise you study there's a whole chapter of the Srimad Chaitanya Charitamrita, which gives detailed information in this regard. It's one in the Adi Lila, one of the first chapters about Lord Chaitanya. It will give much detailed information. Sometimes, though we know the importance of reading Bhagavatam, we find excuses to not read it. Why and how does we stop this bad attitude? Well, here's a real simple way to break the habit is say, okay, it's like in the temple. We don't take prasadam until we study the Bhagavatam. You make that your vrat, that every day I will fast until I've finished my rounds and read the Bhagavatam. You'll read the Bhagavatam, I guarantee you. Before breakfast, I will study Bhagavatam. Before I take my morning meal, I will finish my rounds and I will study the Bhagavatam. I recommend this vrat to help one break the habit of having spaced out japa and not reading the Bhagavatam. Rise early in the morning, finish your rounds and read Bhagavatam, and then take your breakfast. I recommend this. There could be slight adjustments depending on your family situation, but that principle should be followed as much as possible. There may be some ladies who have to get up and cook for the kids and do so many things, it's impossible. So I'm not saying it's an absolute hard and fast rule, but as far as possible, everyone should try to do this according to your schedule. Is it all possible to do it? Chant your rounds and read Bhagavatam before breakfast. How should a devotee react when hearing criticism of other devotees? Well, you should defeat it. A devotee cannot tolerate hearing other devotees being criticized. Now you can criticize, you see. Devotees are meant to be glorified. Of course, persons who are in authority, like the spiritual master or the parents, it's their duty to criticize their dependents. Sometimes the spiritual master has to chastise his disciples. That's his duty to do that. He doesn't do it in a lording and over mood. He does it in a mood of service. But in general, the principle is to always glorify the devotees and appreciate them. After chanting my rounds, very often I see myself in an angry mood with my family members. If chanting brings me some punya, do I lose it when I become angry? How to overcome this mood? How to become humble? Hmm. Yeah, if you get in a very peaceful mind by chanting Hare Krishna, state of mind, very peaceful, and you finish your rounds, you come out and become all agitated and disturbed. It's like the elephant who takes his bath and rolls in the dirt. You have to remember that the 10 offenses apply 24 hours a day, not just when you have your hand on the beads. One should avoid the 10 namaparads all day long, not just when you're chanting. So always be in the mood of chanting, even when you're not chanting. Oh boy, let's see. Got 5 minutes left and I've got 20 questions here. Okay. Oh, I already answered that one, that's good. All right. Read that one already. And okay. Giving initiation is exclusively reserved for those in the renounced order of life. That's bogus. They've asked me to comment, and I just did. According to the Prabhupada, people have these ideas because they're not reading the Prabhupada's books. It's described very clearly in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that formerly the system was that only householders could give diksha. The former system in the Pancharatna, it's described in Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita purport. Formerly the system was that only grihastha brahmanas could give diksha. That was the former system. But Lord Chaitanya introduced the principle kiva vipra kiva nashi shuddha kene noe jay krishna tattva say guru hoy, that anyone can give diksha. So by the principle of Lord Chaitanya, then sannyasis were also allowed to give diksha. But the former system was only grihastha brahmanas would give diksha. This is described in Prabhupada's purport. So the verses kiva vipra, doesn't matter if you're a brahmana, kiva nashi, or whether you're a sannyasi, kiva vipra, shiva nashi, shudra, or you're a sudra cloud. Whatever your position may be, if you know the science of Krishna, you can become guru. So, you know, it's a fact. And one of my disciples was told in mind for what? Your spiritual master is a married man? You see? So if one can only be guru if they're a sannyasi, then I guess Krishna didn't know the rule. Right? Who was Krishna's spiritual master? Sandipani Muni. Was he a sannyasi? No, he was a married man. So I guess Krishna didn't know what he was doing. He accepted a married man as his spiritual master. Oh my goodness, somebody better tell Krishna he's got to get it together. He can't be an ISKCON devotee if he has a grihastha or a vanaprastha spiritual master. He's not qualified properly as an ISKCON devotee. Someone better tell Krishna he's in Maya because he accepted a married man as his guru. I think that makes it pretty clear. Actually, one of my godbrothers, sannyasis, he said, "When are you going to take a sannyas?" So I have actually a sannyasi mentor in the GBC who gives me advice on my guru activities. So I asked my sannyasi GBC mentor, I said, "My sannyasi good brother said that you should, when are you going to take sannyas? So what should I do? I mean, my wife and I travel and preach together all over the world." He said, "You are better than sannyas." That's what he told me. My sannyasi godbrother, who's on the GBC, he told me, "You are better than sannyas." Anyway, that's his kindness. But I'm just a humble servant of the devotees. I don't think I'm any great. But.
There are seven kinds of mothers.
Huh?
There are seven kinds of mothers.
It's also stated that there are seven kinds of mothers. There's the real mother. There's the nurse. There's the wife of the Brahmin. There's the wife of the king. That's the queen. Another one is called Guru Patni. The wife of the guru is one of the seven mothers. Of course, the gurus don't have wives, do they? That's not proper. There's no such thing as a guru with a wife, right? So that means the Vedic wisdom must have not known the rule. When the Shastra says Guru Patni, I guess whoever compiled that didn't know what they were talking about. So the point is, Guru can be a married man. He doesn't have to be. He can be. That's the point. Bhakti Vinod Thakur was a fully empowered Vaishnava Acharya, and he was a married man. Okay. Okay, our time is up. And we thank you all very much for your participation in this seminar on the Srimad Bhagavatam. All I can do is beg you all, you must all read the Bhagavatam every day. If you can't read it in the morning, read it before you go to bed at night. Somehow or other, every day you must all read the Bhagavatam. That's my humble request. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
His Holiness Sriman Shankar Sundasini Kari Maharaj ki jai.